And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA Utiful Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Did you have a chance to read Freedoms Phoenix e-zine, did you? Learn a lot, did you? Yeah, you need to take advantage of that, because there's a lot of information that just survive and thrive, know what I mean? This is, it's going to be a good day today. Let me tell you what's going on. Mike Duggar was one of my mentors. I mean, you know, in the early days when I, you know, had the five gazillion questions. Yeah, but what about? But what about? But what about? But what about? There was a gentleman named Gary Fallon that was a precinct committeeman for the Republican Party. And he's a very, you know, he's a Catholic, very devout, very hardcore libertarian, though. I mean, he was of the opinion that the protection of rights went to the unborn, and he was a big pro-life kind of guy, but he did it in a libertarian way. He would have Bob Anderson and I, when we had the printing press, you know, pumping out all kinds of stuff, we would do printings for First Way, which was an organization that was to provide the pairing of pregnant girls with families that wanted to adopt. So instead of getting all policy and everything and having force of law and got it, he just provided the solution. Very libertarian of him. So always had respect for that. And I would ask him a lot of the questions and so on. And he would go, whenever he didn't have the answer, he'd take me to Mike Duggar, which is an activist at the time, and the state chair of the Libertarian Party, a guy named Rick Tompkins, that would later run for the nomination in 96 against Brown. Now, during that time, I would ask, I mean, you know, you think you got questions? You think you got, man, you go, oh, I was a griller. Yeah, but what about, and what about, and what about? This is where, at that time in the early 90s, this is where the phrase, oh, freedom's the answer, what's the question? After a while, I started to get it. So I go, oh, okay, I get it. So freedom's the answer no matter what my question is. Yeah, pretty much. Oh, okay, so that's stuck. Freedom's the answer, what's the question? So no matter what I come up with, no matter what scenario, no matter how many, you know, more freedom makes that better. If that, whatever it is that you want to accomplish, you know, peace and prosperity and more freedom and more, you know, no matter what your circumstance is, aliens coming down, Klingons, whatever, you know, more freedom make it better. All right. So it's became my default position. How would more freedom make it better? Not looking for some government program or a law to be passed. Well, part of that was Mike Duggar. Mike Duggar was, he put me in my place on several occasions. So it kind of, you know, you always need these kind of people that you respect and know what's going on, well read, that, you know, kind of keep you in place. Now, Duggar and I have become good friends over the past, God, it's been 20 years, man. So we were the young activist of a lot of you guys out there listening. You know, we, under 30, that was us 20 years ago. And we'd just been a busting butt. Now, what happens? All of a sudden, you know, Mike Duggar works for the U.S. Postal Service as a letter carrier. He's a Fed. And don't think we don't, you know, remind him every chance we get. So what happens is now he's under all kinds of different retirement programs and so on. Things have changed. I mean, there's all kinds, you know, just in the last 20 years, you think his stuff the way it we sit here and watch it. You're old enough, you can see the progression, the goose step march towards. So what Mike is talking about, what we wanted to do, he stayed the night last night, gets off work, comes in, have dinner, we're chilling. Barry Hess was over. He's a gubernatorial candidate, lives close by, and we're just hanging, yakking and so on, because today we're going to do all 3 hours on a libertarian retiring. Where do you put your money? Where do you go to live? How are you going to live? What kind of life are you going to do after a lifetime of busting butt in 120-degree weather, you know, delivering mail? Now, this is, and you know, the federal government programs, how do they change? Your 401 IR, we got your money in the bucket and kind of it's all ours now. You know, how high were you a few years ago? Where are you now? And if you knew what was coming, why didn't you do something about it? Oh, did he? Well, what did he do? You know, a lot of my friends, we have, you know, you get accumulation of, I never did anything. I just bought silver. I'm not smart enough. You know, and I'm not working for an employer that's, you know, because they entice you socially and economically engineer you. We'll match this and we'll put our fake money in this fake account as long as we get all your fake and we'll be all faked. You know, and the incentive for you to do it. Then how much can you get out? When can you get it out? What can you do with it once you get it out? How is it taxed? You know, Duggar's up close to doing retirement here. You know, he can make, you know, and Bob Anderson, another friend of ours, he's within a couple of years, too. You know, he's like, you know, he's planning. So this is, what would you do? How would you do it? Are you planning now in your 20s? Because I tell you, 20, 30 years goes by, boom, hello. And with, you know, our knowledge of nutrition, that's helping a lot. You know, we eat better. You know, we're probably healthier in a lot of ways than a lot of people our age now, but, you know, we're back then, or hopefully we can at least survive. You know, we're starting to find out nutrition plays a big, giant part in your health and the quality of life. I mean, it's not like that was a big secret. It's just that, you know, we didn't know how devastating eating Cheerios every day was till 30 years of Cheerios, and you go, damn, man, you must eat a lot of Cheerios. So, yeah, but I got, my heart's got a lot of low cholesterol. Oh, crap, man. So this is, and we're going to go on and on today. But this first segment, I wanted to make sure that you understood what we're doing. This is, oh, the video's not even on that one. Oh, they were just rebooting this. Camera one was not. So, yeah, we got a switch video switcher here. We got to get over it. Well, those of you online, we'll get you taken care of here. There it is. Okay. No, it was this, the switcher. Yeah, we got a lot of stuff. Now it's all good. Sorry. So what we're going to do is go ahead and have a conversation today and just walk it through from the time that we were activists back then, kind of decisions that we made in retirement, what we were going to be doing in the future, what we expect to happen, when did we start buying guns? Why did we start buying guns? What's in your bug-out bag? Do we even have a bug-out bag? Are we bugged out enough? You know, when we go camping, is it, you know, it's a training exercise? I mean, you know, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? You know, what about water here in the desert? Where do we want to retire? Do we want to stay in the state? Are we looking to move to New Hampshire or northern Arizona? And why? What's a march of government? What about the immigration issue here? Federal government. Southwestern mentality of the pioneer spirit of. You see, this is going to be an interesting conversation today because I know there's a lot of people that are our age, that kind of veterans of this, you know, freedom movement thing that, you know what, we did all this so that we could be free. This someday grandkid kind of whatever. I'm doing it for me. And of course them, but we have to have a base. We have to have a place, at least in our minds, of what we're comfortable with. How much anal probing are we going to put up with? Do we even travel anymore? How are we going to travel? Because it's coming to the streets now. I mean, they're on the streets now. The highways, the byways. Did we see this coming? Did we have a plan? What we were going to do? When they start doing road checkpoints, we're going to what? And you see, it's going to be an interesting day. You guys stay right there. We'll be right back. Ernest Hancock, Mike Duggar.
Arizona has been one of the hottest real estate markets in the past, up until the last couple of years. Homes that were once going for $500,000 to $1 million in prestigious areas are now going for less than half of what the original purchase price was. That makes it a very good time to buy. So if you were ever thinking of retiring to Arizona's inviting climate and laid-back and friendly lifestyle, now is the time. That's where I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty, and I have provided a way for you to search for properties that are of interest to you, all at your own convenience and without having to give out any personal information. Visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com to start your search today. And when you're ready to make a move to Arizona's warm and sunny climate, please feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. Many are working hard to make sure Arizona is not only a beautiful place to live, but a free and peaceful one as well. So what are you waiting for? Make your move today by calling 602-828-1819. And don't forget to visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
No roads. You know, that's all we hear. Yeah, but what about the roads? I'm like, God, lighten up, man. You know, I got to put up with all this crap because of government roads? Seriously? We did shows. Remember Gene Carboneau, the letter carrier in Maine? We did history on the Postal Service. That's where all this ROAD thing came from. It was the postal roads. That was what, you know, Ben Franklin was all big on, you know, the post office. And we have to put up with all this crap because of mail. I'm like, you know, and they're going down. You know, this is, you know, that's another thing we'll talk about today. You know, Mikey's been, you know, he's understood, you know, we've used the mail. We've had some fun with that, too. We'll get into that. But I want to go ahead and go to Mike. And, you know, it's Mike Duggar, D-U-G-G-E-R, you know, and he goes by many things, but let's call him Doogie. Now, the thing is that Doogie's been doing this a long time, but I want to go back to the beginning. You know, it's 1975 when he graduated high school. I graduated in 79, so he's in like his mid-50s, you know, around in there. Good-looking mid-50s, by the way. And the thing is that, you know, during this time, we were going through a lot of the same things that you are now. We had gone off the gold standard a few years before. The Vietnam War, inflation was hitting, money spinning, printing, blah, 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 blah. That's why they went off the gold standard. The world knew that we were screwing them like they're doing now. And so that's why they call it revolution. It just keeps going round and round. We've been through this before. And so we understand, and this is when what? It's when Dr. Paul's going, I'm going to Congress to just, you know, scream this Austrian economics as loud as I can for as many decades as it takes to stick. Well, here it comes. If you know and you grew up through this and you could see it, you see, hey, man, I remember when candy bars were nickel. I mean, this and had real sugar in them. So if you know all this stuff about nutrition, health, gas lines, manipulation of commodities, I mean, on and on and on. Oh, your friend's going to war. He just barely missed the Vietnam War just to get ready. We got to go to, you know, selective service because of Iran and Afghanistan and the Soviet Union and on and on and on and on. We've been through this. My kids would go, oh, Dad, you don't understand. I go, really? Really? Let's go look at the headlines from, you know, 20, 30 years ago. The exact same thing and oftentimes the same people. Same names. Cheney, Rumsfeld, Bush. I mean, what? They're the same people. Okay. So let's go ahead and start off. All right, Doogie. Start me off, man. What was the era that you came into this and, you know, getting out of high school in Vietnam and everything? You know, paint us a picture.
Well, that's an interesting place to start. I didn't get into anything libertarian or political or anything till much later. As you said, I graduated in 75. I was pretty apolitical, although I was kind of fascinated by the political process a little bit at that time, and I had been since junior high. The propaganda that they put in us, the process itself was fascinating, although my views weren't formed at that time. I remember when I first registered to vote, I think I registered as a Democrat because I was so upset over the whole Nixon thing and what a crook he was. So I, you know, I registered Democrat, and some years later I changed it to Republican going into 80, and then I was so disillusioned by that, I finally said there's got to be something else. And by the mid-80s, I switched to Libertarian and stuck with that, and now I'm like non-aligned.
Well, how did you even know about Libertarians? Where did that come from?
That's something I didn't learn about till later. I think I had some rumblings or heard some rumblings through the 1980 election, because at that time the Koch brothers had pretty much invaded and taken over the Libertarian Party with their money. You know, money buys you a lot of
Koch, Coke, whatever, yeah. Whoever says it. Yeah.
So that there was some notoriety to the Libertarian Party at that time. I didn't really know it. I had just heard of it. And it was later on, it was really Ron Paul that ultimately got me involved in the political arena or aware of the Libertarian aspect of it. But my initial...
So Ron Paul's 88 campaign for Libertarian...
Well, that was later. I was a Ron Paul fan way before that.
Tell me about it.
Well,
how do you even know about?
That's what I was getting into. My initial exposure to Libertarian ideas was acquiring, or at least borrowing, and I won't say where or how I came across them, but the issues of The Freeman, which is a publication of the Foundation for Economic Education in Irvington-on-Hudson, New York. And I would highly recommend that you check them out and probably subscribe to their paper. But they published articles about Austrian economics and freedom and liberty in general. It wasn't overtly, the word libertarian wasn't necessarily used, but the concepts were all there and illustrated in very well-written articles. So I would read that every chance I get. Eventually, I subscribed and I got that. And through that, I became aware of Ron Paul. And my first political campaign donation was to his, I believe it was 86. He ran for, it was 86. He was running for an open Senate seat in Texas against Phil Graham. And it was pretty well known that whoever won that Republican nomination was going to get that Senate seat. So he gave up his congressional seat to run for this Senate seat. And I slipped a big $50 to his campaign, as a donation. That was my first campaign donation, because he was the first politician I'd ever seen that I just completely agreed with what he was talking about, at least economically and freedom-wise and whatnot.
How did he do in that primary?
Oh, he lost.
By how much? I mean,
I don't even recall.
I'll look it up.
But
imagine, Ron Paul instead of Phil Graham. I mean,
The thing is, it set the stage for 88, because now he was no longer in Congress. He was doing other things. He went back to practicing medicine, started publishing newsletters and stuff to keep the ideas going and whatnot. And then ultimately, he wound up being the nominee of the Libertarian Party in 88, which got me involved with the Libertarian Party in 88. And then I stayed very active for about the next dozen years or so in the Libertarian party. And in the meantime, I ran into Ernie, and we did a lot of things. The rest is history. But
okay, Phil Graham got 73%. Ron Paul got 16%. That the machine, man. Heck no. Because by then, he was already on the gold committee thing of 80 and all this kind of... He was hammering on legalizing gold bullion again and minting coins and doing all... They saw where he was going.
He was very much a hard money advocate from the get-go.
So to think, one of their boys, Phil Graham, was going to lose to Ron Paul, that's just so not going to happen.
Absolutely.
So this, is it really 60... Are the people that... turned off to this philosophy? I there's a lot of evidence that there is, but there's so much more evidence, and that was where we started meeting and overlapping. I could see this whole thing was so manipulated. I couldn't give it any credence. I saw how bad it was, and really what the goal was. It was gazillions of dollars at stake, depending on who got these few hundred positions. And I'm
absolutely
going, well, hell. I know where the money went. Make sure they got the positions.
lots of political payoff going there. Just, that's age old as far as the American political system. But it's really gotten to the point where it's ridiculous. So many positions, so much money, so many government contracts at stake, and all of that determines, what's going to be the policy of the U.S. government. Are we going to invade the Middle East? Well, hell yeah, that's a lot of money.
it's so predictable what's going to happen, but it's... they keep thinking they can kick it down the road, Well, it's down the road. I remember Ron Paul saying he had some people up at a speech just last couple of months. He said, you know, we said if we don't fix this someday, we're going to have to. Well, you know, today's that someday. It's here. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. We're going to recap last segment, what we're doing here with Mike Duggar, a postal carrier here getting ready to retire, and his life as a libertarian activist. He graduates high school in 75. Vietnam War is just finishing up. Watergate is like, you know, now we know. Then you get into, you know, I had a 65 Chevelle Super Sport in high school, you know, right in my senior year. And man, gasoline went from like 60 cents a gallon to whatever to over a dollar, and you doubled. And I'm like, what? You know, heck, my gas gauge went down as fast as my speedometer went up.
Hey, I got one for you. The Arab oil embargo took place 3 weeks before I got my driver's license.
Ooh. Lines. You guys haven't seen this yet. You know, this is, you know, that's a bunch of manipulated. They're lines. And once the lines start, I mean, as much as you pay for fuel, it's not a motivation to start, man, where's my electric? I'll do, and I'll ride a bicycle and give me my Vespa or whatever until you have to sit for hours in a line. You know, when that starts, it's going to change, and it's changed a lot of stuff then. And they're like, well, we don't want to do that again. That pissed off too many people too much. They got a level of pissed off they want to maintain, you know. You go over that, and then, you know, stuff happens. So then we have Duggar graduates high school, and by 1980, he had started working for the Postal Service, where that's where he became aware of the Fee magazine. You know, you see it going across some guy on your route or whatever you're doing. He's getting, you get some interest in this, kind of look at it. Okay, that's cool. You know, whatever, and you subscribe. So imagine that. Just by being a subscriber to Fee, you converted a great activist, you know, at the Postal Service. How often does that happen? Probably more than people realize. So that's like how we segue this into the e-zine. That's why it's a subscriber is the only way you can download it, or a subscriber that you can read it online. But as a subscriber, when you download that enhanced PDF that you can read on your iPad, your Android smartphone, whatever, your tablets, you can take that file and email it. And it's anywhere from about 5 to 8 meg. And it's a beautiful magazine, and it's fully interactive and so on. But we encourage it to people that write and different organizations that send it. We'll send it to them in a package put on their website for just this reason. Once you get exposed to this and are past 10 issues, now you go, ooh, what a resource and a perspective. That's why. Because I know the kind from just life experience. By having this resource available, once you start and you go down this road, and our first edition was 80-something pages of just philosophy, there was a reason, because I've seen the impact of the stuff like that Fee did, and Future Freedom Foundation with Hornberger, and a bunch of other organizations like this, you know, the Mises Institute, you know, all this stuff has an enormous accumulative effect. It creates a foundation of understanding for when something like the Lovolution starts, all of a sudden, you got an enormous resources stuff to get now. We have activism, you know, and that's detailed in the magazine too. Then you got YouTube, Freedom's Phoenix, on and on and on. So when we have some things like the dime cards coming online, you know, this, yeah, Michael Nystrom just sent me an email. He just got them, and he said, ooh, rock and roll and whatnot. We're going to launch Monday, you know, this next Monday, a week, get everything, to, you know, you make 1,000 cards. Anyway, so we get that all done, and we're going to go on Daily Paul Radio, and we'll, you know, get a big push. I talked to Charles Goyette last night. Here's another person that we've had a lot of influence on. He was more conservative, kind of, you know, libertarian-esque, Goldwater Institute-y kind of libertarian-leaning, and it just, he's gone hardcore. And his book is, we're going to have him on this month, and publicists are all pushing his book. New York Times best-selling again. He's working for a newsletter writing service now. It's really pumping. I mean, his career's taken off. He's the only Austrian economics in this. Now, all of these things, all of these ties, all of these people, all of this has a root in what was going on a lot here in Arizona. And part of that was Duggar. I mean, a big part of that, you know, there's key people that had a big influence on a lot of this stuff that's going on. Mikey's one of them. How? Why? 75, you graduate. What were you doing from 75 till you started working for the post office in 80?
Trying to get a college education and being a little ungrounded as far as what I wanted to do. That didn't work out well.
Because you're a hobag.
Whatever. I was wandering aimlessly as far as career-wise. I didn't know what I wanted to do.
You're a dating, karaoke, singing, clubbing kind of guy.
Well, I was doing a little of that sort of stuff, too, but... by the way, there was no karaoke in them days.
Yeah,
I said, I'm an old timer. You had to sing along with the radio back then. But at any rate, ultimately, I stumbled upon this job in the Postal Service, and it was a friend of a neighbor had worked there, and they let us know that the test was coming up, and go take the test and put in your application, blah, blah, blah. I did it. And their process is rather slow. It was over a year before I actually, that was probably 9 months before I actually got hired after I took the test and the application and whatnot. But the rest is history. It's been over 30 years, almost 31 now, since I went to work there.
Wow. That's it. So how old? You were probably 24 or something like that?
I was 23 and a half when I started.
Man. And then you had a bunch of Vietnam vets sitting around you going, you know, jumping at everything got dropped. I mean, you know, what kind of... Because that's pretty much the reputation that the Postal Service had.
Well, the Postal Service has always had a policy of preference for veterans, whether they're Vietnam vets or whatever, in whatever era. And, of course, in my era, it was Vietnam vets. There was a lot of them that had come back and, you know, in their own way, they did their version of coming back into society and not knowing where they wanted to go with it. And they wound up in the Postal Service because it was a job that paid pretty good.
Well, you know, that was another thing, a term in the early 90s, going postal, because it was always some postal guy taking an AK to laying waste or whatever. And then, you know, a lot of the gun stuff that we were doing, everybody's looking at, oh, no, Duggar's going to go postal, you know. And we were on the steps April 15th of the main post office downtown with an AR-15, a MAC-9, and SKS wired to a 4x8 that were raffling off with Sheriff Mack and Councilwoman Frances Barwood, and you drawing the winners, and your people that you knew you're supervising before to see you out there raffling off a gun, they're going, you know, this just doesn't feel right. I remember those days. So these people, do you have that kind of thing going on now from Iraq, the same kind of hiring?
Actually, there is no hiring now in the Postal Service, trust me. The Postal Service has gone through a lot of time. I've seen massive changes in the way that mail is handled and the amount of mail and just the whole way that business is done with the Postal Service in that 31 years. And that's just, you know, kind of an interesting aspect of it in itself. But the Internet came along, and like a lot of things, like the news business and whatnot, it's taken a big toll on our business because, you know, people don't pay their bills through the mail anymore. They get on the computer and they pay their bills online.
Okay,
and that was
let's go back to the beginning. We'll get to that. We got all day. I want to start back in the 80s. When you go in and you're a 23-and-a-half-year-old kid, you go up and you say, I'm working for federal government. Yeehaw. And they give you all kinds of different retirement options and how you separate your money and save for and all this. What were the options about the union? Tell me, because things have changed. You know, a lot of things have changed.
It was very simple when I was hired. It was effectively a civil service position. I was hired under the civil service retirement system as opposed to Social Security, which people have been hired under since 1984. So I got in, you know, couple years under the wire in that sense.
Explain that. So they have a Social Security retirement thing for everybody, and then
federal workers have their own separate retirement system. They're not in the Social Security system. They're under the Civil Service retirement system. And like I say, the time I was hired by the Postal Service, it was covered under the Civil Service retirement system as well. So there is a whatever number of people, you know, that were hired in that era, like me, who are still kind of dinosaurs and you know, were still covered by that. When they initially made the change over to Social Security and whatnot in 84, they offered an incentive for us to switch over, which I didn't take because all I knew at the time was that the payout at the end of the the road there was a little bit more in civil service than it was in Social Security, and I didn't want to give that up.
When we come back, I want to talk about the options that they had as an employee. And then, like he was saying, they changed it. Was it voluntary? Did they start forcing stuff? And then, you know, what's a social and economic engineering goal of the man? We'll talk about it. We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasing.com.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Go, Freddie.
Yeah, everybody makes fun of my queen. You know, just, you know, you should see the rejoiners that we had Queen when Jet was board hopping for me. He's back there ballying and stuff.
Oh, you gotta love Queen.
Oh, I'm just, that was our communication. You know, that's one thing we could talk about. We get a chance. I want to get back to the unions and all that stuff. But the communication in our generation was music.
Absolutely.
You know,
it was the way that memes were transmitted that you would not get through the mainstream media.
And a lot of times, the corporate blah, 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 they're just looking for record sales. They didn't read the lyrics. They didn't care. You know, they didn't even understand what they were reading anyway. You know, but, you know, our generation, we understood. I mean, we...
No, the corporations, all they knew is this stuff will sell.
Yeah.
That's all that mattered. That's
go,
all really
go sell
that
record.
That's all that should matter to them, really. You know, these guys are good. They'll sell.
Yeah, but then they started getting into, no, you're not allowed to get Dixie chicked. I mean, you know, just mm-hmm. like... You know, no. But if you can do Proud Boy of American, I mean, boy, you get F-16s flying overhead. The there's a story on Freedom's Phoenix. I'm looking at this. Troops used for crowd control at Texas Kite Festival.
At a kite festival?
Yeah. But it seemed better. I mean, they were, like, you know, ordering people on and off buses and where and how to go and this and everything. They go, oh, no, it's normal. Normal. Drew was telling me that when he went to Liberty Forum, he goes, yeah, I did your deal. Because I did, I got to tell you this. Donna, you know, I was flying a lot during the 08 campaign going. And one time Donna went with me. I can't remember where we were going. And I'm describing to her how this TSA thing is working. It's starting to really get, because we'd flown, you know, earlier. And she hadn't flown in a while. And I go, you watch. We go in. They did. All of a sudden, sure enough, I get pulled over. And they take my bag. And this woman was going at sublight speed, man. I mean, she was wiping it and going intentionally really slow. Was she doing it intentionally, Don? I mean, how slow? It was ridiculous. And we're just sitting, I'm going, is this normal? And she goes, if you got a problem, you bring the supervisor. I go, no, that's normal. So normal. I turn to Don, I go, normal. This is normal. So I go, have you got a problem over here? Comes the supervisor. I go, no, absolutely not. This is normal. All normal. I kept saying normal. I probably said it 30 times. No, everything's normal. This is normal. Donna, this is normal. I just want you to know, normal. I'm just waiting for her. You know, she'd done normal. Normal. And they were obviously pissed. But what are they going to get me for saying normal? I mean, you know. So
Do you know that's the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws and that marijuana is
illegal? Oh, that's good. That's good. So I just got – so I was telling – and Drew did that. He's like – it's all normal.
Situation normal.
Normal. Oh, I can't believe. So this is, we've been through a lot of changes. Now, I want to go back to 1980. You get hired by the United States Postal Service, and you had various options. And one of those, you have a union thing to deal with, and you have, which I remember in the early 90s, you were like the shop steward at one time or something.
No, that was in the early 80s when I was still a clerk the first couple of years that I worked there. For about 6 months before I switched to being a carrier, I was a steward, and that was an interesting experience. I would recommend anybody who works in a union shop, spend a little time as a steward. It's an education.
Well, what does that mean anyway?
You,
steward is what?
You are the representative advocate, kind of like the lawyer for an employee who's having a problem with the management. You know, whether the employee wants to file a grievance or something, or whether he's being disciplined and he needs some kind of an allegedly neutral third party to be there to help him and explain his contractual rights and obligations to him. And that's really what it's all about. It's all about the contract when you work in any kind of a union shop. You have an agreement between the labor pool and management as to how things operate in the workplace. And management has their rights and responsibilities, and the labor has their rights and responsibilities. And a steward is there to understand that contract on behalf of the employee so that his rights and responsibilities are respected, and management is going to obviously take their position in that regard.
Well, give me your spiel on the postal union. Is it the same union now as it was then? Is it the same kind of thing?
I think so, yeah. It's you know, it's a union. Union is a union. It's like I say, and I just gave you a little bit of a nutshell, you know, description of how it functions. But there's also the negotiation phase where management has its team that goes in, and labor has its team goes in every 3 years.
It's the federal government. I mean, is it the federal government? Not the federal government. When did it cease being? It keeps changing all the time. How is it? It's, you know, what? I mean, the post office is what now? When did it change?
It changed originally in 1970. There was a postal strike, and out of that came the spinoff, the reorganization of the Postal Service from the old Post Office Department. And they just essentially set it up as a separate corporation.
Whoa.
And I don't know a lot of the prehistory because that's before my time.
Okay, but I mean, at the old postal, so what was old about it? I mean, what was different?
The Postal Service was a department of the federal government, like any other department, the Defense Department, whatever.
You know, and then it wasn't?
And then it wasn't.
Okay, what was it then?
It was they call it a semi-autonomous corporation.
That's, I don't know,
somehow
about how fascist
related,
you can get.
Exactly.
You know, seriously. Let's jump, because this is a good point to bring this up. I knew we'd eventually get to it. As your story about the UPS, when they had their campaign, you know, them doing whatever, and the U.S. Postal Service going, oh, beating them every day, every way, and you tell that story.
Well, it was an interesting little campaign. This was back in the late 90s. And at some point, the UPS's president was in a press conference or something, and he said that, you know, on a level playing field, that the Postal Service could never outcompete us and blah, blah, blah. And in a sense, he had a point. But anyways, the Postal Service jumped on it internally as a little rah-rah campaign where we were supposed to prove them wrong every day in every way. You know, it's a standard thing in any corporation. You know, you've got your internal PR right. That goes on, and that's what they were doing. And I listened to it for several months, and I thought, you know, I don't really have a problem with the people I work with in our organization. I think it competes nicely with them. But in effect, we'll never know because we have advantages, you know, the first-class mail monopoly, the fact that our plants and our vehicles don't pay taxes, and UPS's plants and vehicles are taxed nicely and things like that.
And the land.
And the land, exactly. We don't pay property taxes on our facilities. We own them, but because we're still only semi-autonomous, one of the government aspects we do is it's like the government bought that piece of land and put a building on it, and it goes off the tax rolls. And don't think that local governments don't take that into consideration in terms of site locations and whatnot when it comes time to build a post office.
I remember they don't want you in prime locations.
When they built the new post office out my way in Ahwatukee back in the mid-90s, they had some problems there because the city did not want to give up that land out there because that was some high-dollar land. That was high-demand area right there. It was growing like a weed, you know, back in the go-go real estate days. And they eventually did find a little chunk of land and built a nice post office there. But from what I heard, just as, you know, talk around the office was that it was a bit of a challenge for the Postal Service to get the city or state or whatever to give up that chunk of land because it was
so. Did you bring this up? I mean, they're going, oh, level playing field, we would.
Oh, yeah. I finally, one day, I just got to thinking about it. And the station manager, we have a little separate building where they did certain things outside in the back. And I was in there one day, and the station manager was in. It was just she and I. And I used to like to take the opportunity, when, you know, there's no other ears around it to have my say because I, you know, I'm trying to stay a little non-controversial as I can as a libertarian in the Postal Service, but I told her, I said, look, I says, you know, we had just had the spiel. We'd had a meeting with the spiel, prove them wrong every day in every way. I said, look, I have no qualms about the quality of the employees here or the organization. I think we can compete favorably with anybody out there, but we're never going to know. And the point I made is we don't pay taxes on our vehicles. We don't pay taxes on this building. It's not a level playing field, so how can we really prove them wrong every day in every way? I mean, we can do our best job, but it's still, there's not a level playing field, so we can't prove anything. And she says, well, I think you got a point there. You know, she took it well, you know. And, you know, that was all that was said, but it just seemed to me it was interesting that I think from that moment on, we never heard that again. Now, I don't know if the campaign entirely just died or if the station manager took my stuff to heart and we just never used it in our office again or
because
what.
You could never say it again without that sticking in the back of your cortex. I mean, you know, it's just, damn it, you know, it's a lie.
All I know is at least in our office, that rah-rah campaign went away.
So now we're looking at the post. Let's go ahead and go back again.
We'll talk about it in a little bit.
Yeah, we'll talk about it a little bit. Because we need to understand the transition of America in general. Our generation lived it. You got to keep in mind, there was the 50s America, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. There is a goose step progression that's going somewhere. And we're not there yet. It's total Dominion 1984. We're behind schedule. I mean, you know, every single step has been to consolidate more power and lessen the abilities of the individual to assert their own authority over themselves. This is just a trend that we can see. How do you get out of it? The generation's coming up. Generation next. What do you do? What decisions do you make? What were things that we realized, and did we make decisions, you know, not too late? Are we going to be able to survive this thing and educate ourselves and keep our goodies?
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
For a long time, and he's going through the final days of I'm retiring, I want to go and hang out and doing what I get to keep. And a lot of his co-workers, man, they got nailed. You know, they're just like, I wish I listened to Mr. Michael Duggar, because from the beginning, if you understand Austrian economics, if you knew something was wrong, if you're following, you're reading Fee magazines, was a foundation for economic education, or is that what it is? You know, Fee's...
The Freeman. Called
the Freeman. Now, what happened was, is he would absorb this information, became aware of Dr. Paul, supporting his Senate run against Phil Graham back in 86. And then he runs for president as a Libertarian candidate in 88. So I meet Mike about 91, and we, you know, his understanding kind of gets me caught up, you know, a decade worth of I didn't know any better. And we just progressed from there, and we've done a lot of things. I mean, there was a lot of things, you know, national kind of back in the day. I remember Duggar started getting web awards for first web pages. You know, he's getting, the first web pages we ever built. There was a web. I mean, you know, we started from the beginning back in the day. And he's doing Linux back when, you know, what's that? You know, I mean, it's, so this is, yeah, you got enough computer parts in your house to do.
I got way too many computer parts. I need to get rid of a bunch. They're so obsolete, it's not funny.
So we were you guys. And what happened, though, is each one of us had different roles. Well, I was the, you know, you deal with, you know, Mike and all the nice guys, or you deal with me, you know. And the, they go, no, we'll do it. Don't send Ernie. You know, it's kind of, because I'd always bring on the press. You guys want to play? Let's play. So it was, we all had our roles as good cop, bad cop. I was always bad guy. You know, I'm nice, but, you know, we always have fun. Now, as we left the last hour, we're talking about a lot of things, and you're coming into the Postal Service, you're in the union, you're advocating for, you know, you got a contract kind of thing going on, but they signed you up under a certain retirement program that you were saying is, at the time, was different than certainly the rest of us, Social Security mandated, and you gotta. Back then, they had their own retirement. Oh, no, Social Security wasn't good enough for the federal government, okay? So they had their own thing. What was that?
That's just the Civil Service Retirement System. All federal employees, you know, career employees are under the Civil Service Retirement System. All those bureaucrats and whatnot, that's their retirement system. They're not in Social Security.
Okay, why? What's the difference? What? Is it better or worse?
You know, for the same amount of time, you get a little better benefit at the end, I think, as a federal civil service retiree than you would as a, and also the other significant aspect of it, and this is not something that I should gloss over, it's why I'm just about ready for retirement. I can retire at 55. I don't have to wait till 62, 65, 90, whatever they make it.
Why?
Because that's the way the Civil Service Retirement System works.
That seems like 10 years earlier retirement is a big Benny.
That's a big Benny, especially because you can go out of the Postal Service 10 years earlier, go back to work in some other job under Social Security, get your quarters in, and then when you do retire at 65, you get two checks. You get to double dip.
Oh, you scum. Okay, so you go ahead and retire at what percentage?
It's dependent upon how long you've been in service. I remember when I got hired, it seemed to me like this was a really good deal because they said after 40 years, you'll get an 80% retirement. And I thought, you mean, I work here till I'm 63 and a half, and I walk away and I make 80% of what I made when I was working. Sign me up.
Wow. So at 55, what's a percent?
It's less. Probably more like 30 or 60, 55, 60%. I'm not sure exactly what.
So you're, I mean, you're just looking to stop working? I mean, are you done working? I hate working?
No,
or
I would like to just go do something different if I can figure out just what that is. I'm kind of like the way I was in college. I want to go do something, but what is it? You know, what am I qualified for? The problem that I have in that regard is you work as a letter carrier for 30 years and you retire and you go out into the workforce. You didn't really qualify yourself for much by doing that. You know, that doesn't really.
Well, you've been going to school learning some kind of something. What was it you were doing? Energy?
I did get a 2-year degree in electric power technology. And that's, of course, that's been a few years back. I don't know how an employer might look at that at this point. It's been like 8 years or something since I did that. But that's you know, an alternative I could go on. And actually, my thought at that time was to go to work for the federal government and the Western Area Power Administration and just be able to transfer my retirement years into that. But it didn't happen. So.
Okay, so you took on the civil service. They gave you an option in the mid-'80s or something. They restructured again or did something, and they changed the retirement for other people.
Part of an ongoing restructuring of the Postal Service, you know. But what they did is after, I think, January 84, they no longer hired their employees under the Civil Service Retirement System. They hired them under Social Security. So what they did at that time is they offered incentives to civil service people. They also implemented the Federal Employee Retirement System, which was that they call it the Federal Employee Retirement System, but basically it's Social Security. And they have there's the Thrift Savings Plan as well, where it's like a supplemental 401k for government employees. And that exists throughout the federal government as well. But they were offering at the time that if you would switch over into the Social Security side, that you could also join the Thrift Savings Plan and contribute to that, and the government would match up to 5 or 10%.
Social economic engineering.
Well, it was just an incentive. They wanted their employees into this new system and out of that civil service
engineering
system.
They want you into this bucket.
Yeah. And I think that's where we're at now. You know, fast forward to, you know, 2012, there are a lot of us like me who have been around for 30 years or whatever, and we're still under that civil service retirement. They want them out of the Postal Service. I don't know what it is. There's something about having these civil service retirement people in there. I think they really want us out. They've been you know, beating the drum to get us to retire because we're turning 55 and they want us to go. And I'm not sure the significance of that. I just know there's something going on there. They want to be completely free of that civil service.
Makes you wonder why. I mean, what would be the financial or the
jurisdictional
incentive?
Here's a speculation.
Okay.
Once we're completely free of that umbilical with the federal government, what's to say they couldn't bundle that Postal Service off and sell it?
Okay. So they got a privatization. When we get rid of all this federal linking into blah, blah,
it's
blah.
It's been a 40-year-long process of privatizing the Postal Service. This is, you know, kind of the move.
They better hurry up.
Yeah, they're talking about doing it with those ROADS as well that we paid for. Sell them off and let you pay to use them now. Now that you paid to build them, you get to pay to use them too.
Okay. All right. So they take the Postal Service and they go private. How do you think it'd compete?
Like I say, I think we could compete well. You know, they might have to make some adjustments.
Do I get to use my... See, this is one thing that I always found weird. As you become of age, you know, all of a sudden there's certain things that you just go, what? And one of the things that just shocked me is you get your... One of the big things that you do when you first get your first home is you go out and you buy a mailbox. I buy it. It's mine. I design how I want it, what's the stand, the colors I paint it, you know, whether I want it to be, you know, a potted plant, a rooster, or a freaking tank, or whatever it is. I put it out there, and they go, no, that belongs to the United States Postal Service. And I go, yeah, well, I didn't get a reimbursement check, okay? And then somebody else wants, oh, my God, they put something in it, or FedEx uses it, you go to jail. So I'm just going, you know, this postal box, whose is that? And why is that? And will that change if they privatize? Oh, no, it's theirs. Michael Argue, it's the Postal Service's box.
It's just another one of those little contracts that you enter into with the federal government when you accept free mail service.
Free?
Nobody rides for free.
We'll talk about it. We come back.
This is Charles Goyette, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dollar Meltdown, so you can learn how to protect yourself and your family. Now, you can audit the Fed, you can end the Fed, but why not start by ignoring the Fed? Visit DonttreadOnMeme.com. That's Don't Tread on M-E-M-E, Fashioning the Silver Economy. A meme, a contagious idea that spreads within a culture, a spontaneous order. Nowhere is this more evident than in one's free choice in that most marketable of commodities, money. Let us Austrians use wallet voting. Don't Tread on Meme, the leading craftsman of silver dime trading cards, as well as some offbeat liberty-themed apparel. Follow the history of the dime card outreach at onceuponadime.info and get a silver calculator app at whatisthiscoinworth.info. Boycott an empire of theft. Build a society of consent. Don't Tread on Meme. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to the clip. Phoenix.com. Where tonight we're going to have a Super Tuesday party, which is another excuse for me to, you know, get some goodies in my belly. I love having company because Don always makes something very nice. I mean, she takes care of me, but it's always extra. Well, Mike Duggar's come. We had French onion soup last night. One of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was very nice. Now, I want to go ahead and pick up, you know, this one thing that really has got me worried. When I first started, you know, you get a home or something, you get a mailbox, and everything. Oh, that's ours. You know, you couldn't decorate it, or you did, you know, or if you certainly if it was a gang box in an apartment, you know, I decorate mine or something, or we'd put something on it, and they'd get complaints or little letters, and then if you buy something for the curb in your home, and you get and do whatever, and they're making the claim, this is our property, United States Postal Service. Go to jail. Anybody puts anything on it, you got to be careful. Can you even put a door hanger on the post of a mailbox? Can you do that?
Oh, certainly on the post of it. If it's a box you put up and there's a post on it, you can. Okay. If it's one of the Postal Service's gang boxes, no, you can't. You cannot put
okay,
a bill
now,
on
it. Now, this is my question. Now, think about this. What's inside that box, they're laying claim to this, right?
They claim to that space inside the box. That's our domain.
So if I got me a mail slot on my front door, is my house theirs?
Absolutely.
Oh! Seriously? Okay, I put a mail slot in the door of my house, and they're going, we own you?
Well, I don't know about that, but they're saying I have access. That's my domain. As, you know, the Postal Service, the space inside that mailbox is my exclusive domain.
So if you could fit through the mail slot, you can go get some milk out of the refrigerator? Seriously. You know, because they can send the little robots in there. You know, here comes the little nano fly. You know, the postman put it in.
You can speculate on the significance
of
that.
Yeah, they'll laugh. I mean, you know, people will laugh.
If you have a slot in your front door that they put the mail in, you might want to rethink how you have your mail service.
That is amazing. That is okay. All right. Yeah. See, this is kind of fascism. Okay, freaking fascism. So you have the Postal Service is starting to try to extricate themselves from these contracts with employees. That's one of the reasons I can see they're going to go private. They don't have a choice. I remember. Do you remember when was it? It was in the 90s or something. You had the New York Postmaster was filing charges against people for faxing. They were going against people that were using FedEx to send stuff the next day. You remember that?
Yeah. They're trying to claim that violated the private express statutes, which gives the Postal Service the monopoly over first-class mail. I don't think that flew, because, you know, it's a lot like the internet.
It didn't have about a day or two. Everybody's like, are you freaking kidding me? Yeah. And this is the mindset of these people. They would do that.
You have to understand that whoever did that, you know, saw the threat in this technology to the old guard of the Postal Service and its monopoly over first-class mail. The fax, now the internet. You know, they've thrown in the towel probably because of the result of that. They realize that, you know, they're not taking a physical piece of
buggy whips,
whatever, and yeah, and using us, you know, to make this communication. It's kind of just we've sidestepped the Postal Service, and that's why the Postal Service is in a financial world of hurt right now, because everybody via the internet, fax, and everything else has sidestepped the Postal Service, and not just the Postal Service, but its most profitable line of product, that first-class mail.
Okay, now let's go ahead and talk about this. What subsidizes what? This is a big complaint that FedEx and UPS and all these guys have, is that they'll raise here so they can undercut them over there. So how is that being done? Where is it being done?
That's kind of a side effect of it. What it's always been is that first-class mail, which, like I say, that was the high-profit thing. You mail in an electric bill, and it's got the barcode on it. These days, you know, even when I did it, it was just a very inexpensive, you know, product for the Postal Service process. At the time when I was a clerk,
just a machine.
30 years ago, no, it wasn't just a machine. It was a machine. It was actually, we would actually key that mail. We would look at that thing, and all those utility bills that came through had their own special key code. So that was a one-time operation. It got keyed one time, went into its own bin. It was done. We just pull it out, throw it on a tray, and we give it to, you know, SRP or whoever, the electric company, the phone company, whoever it was. That cost us a nickel to process, and we were charging, you know, when I started. I'm so old. I think right after I started, the first-class rate went from 15 to 17 cents. So that was a while back. No, I'm talking about that was what it cost, the first-class stamp.
No, that's what I'm saying. You know, from 17 cents to a nickel, a lot of profit.
But what that did was it subsidized other modes, which was, you know, pretty much all those wonderful ads you get. And the problem that the Postal Service has now is since that has gone away, people aren't putting a stamp on it and sending it and, you know, letting the Postal Service have that money. They're going online and they're paying it online. And
well, what about the junk mail? Is that...
That's what's been subsidized all this time. It's not about UPS or FedEx. It's just about keeping that going. You know, if we compete with anybody, we compete with the newspapers because we're taking their advertising revenue.
Wow. So with the online, it's like death of a thousand cuts on the Postal Service.
That's a night in the ruts for the Postal Service, I'm telling you.
Really? Okay, so the future is, when I see up here, the guys going on, if it fits, we ship, and all that, seems like a good deal. You know, we
it
use
is a
that,
good deal.
We use that a lot. We do a lot, you know, things that way sometimes if we don't need to have to track it. Or
that's just what the Postal Service has had to do. They've had to hurry and scurry and innovate, come up with ways to replace that lost revenue stream. So they're doing it with other products.
Was that at a profit, or are they just trying to dump on the other guys, or
no,
what?
No, they're not trying to dump on anybody. They're trying to survive. It's a market. It's a jungle out there. You know, we compete with these people. We're not out trying to put them out of business.
Without paying taxes.
We're trying to stay alive.
Without paying taxes.
No, well, that's an interesting issue as well, because one of the complaints that the Postal Service has now that they're taking to Congress is that, and it's an interesting situation that developed, is back, I think it was in 96, they passed a law saying that the Postal Service had to, I think over a 10-year period, fund a future health care, you know, benefit fund for the next 70 years, which is to say in 10 years we had to fund this health care fund for employees that haven't even been hired yet. And as it looks like now, they may never be hired. But it was billions of dollars a year that was going into this fund. And that was all well and good for, you know, the first 8-10 years, whatever it was, when the economy was doing pretty good. But after, say, 2007, 2008, when things weren't quite so bright and rosy, and that bite that's been going into our revenue stream really took a hold, all of a sudden you're hearing, you know, in the news about all these billions of dollars we're losing. Well, those billions of dollars can be traced to that fund that we have to fund that nobody else in the world has to fund. But being of the libertarian sort...
So it's a retirement thing.
It's a retirement thing. But being of the libertarian sort, I don't take that simply at face value. I look at it like, okay, we don't fund, you know, we don't pay these taxes on our vehicles. We don't pay these taxes on our...
Property
that all these other businesses pay, but kind of in compensation, we have this fund for our, you know, future retirements, for our health benefits that's being funded. So it kind of levels it out, and maybe we're not competing so well.
Oh, just, you know, dials, turning dials, trying to fascistly run a blah, 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 and it all comes tumbling down. Well, it's tumbling. We'll talk.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Propagandy, propagandy. If you want to fool the folks, it comes in handy. If you want to tell some lies, pull the wool over their eyes, you can do it with propagandy. Propagandy, propagandy. You can liberate the babies from their candy.
Liberate the babies
it's so
from
easy,
their candy.
It's a sin you're gonna want to
propaganda.
You
always depend on propaganda. You know, this is something that we have been just going through round and round and round and round. And a lot of my friends that, you know, are various different industries and jobs and everything, we could just, it's a tapestry that you can kind of see coming together. And in the break, we're talking, I'm like, why would they want to fund a 70-year debt in 10 years and get, you know, we just need to hurry up and get all the money in, get. And who can we socially and economically engineer the easiest, the best, and make them because we got federal employees. Federal employees, guess what? Your money's going into here and this much, and we're short, and we can Congress and give us more, and we can't, and we always got. Why? So they can take it.
It's an income stream.
You know, duh. How hard is this? So they have all, they're taking all the federal employees and they're wanting more retire. Yeah, for your retirement. It's for later because we love you.
You give it to us now, we'll pay you back later. I'd gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Wimpy. You know, okay.
It's a wimpy thing.
So they're coming up with this stuff. We're going to, you know, give us now. Now, of course, with inflation, I mean, is this even part of conversation? You go with people and go, look, man, it doesn't matter. It's, you know, your entire check will pay for a loaf of bread. I mean, you know, get out. So that's what you've kind of decided to do. You're just kind of, look, man, I already see where this goes. How big a hit did you take in 08? Don't you guys have accounts and stuff?
I got the snot beat out of me because I put my money in the wrong spot at the wrong time. It seemed like the place to be at the time or I was avoiding it. The place I was avoiding was government bonds, because when this bailout started, I thought, what? They're going to underwrite all this debt? That just means more paper. More paper means each individual paper is worth less. You know, it's an inflationary thing. The last place I want to be is bonds. Well, what happened is everything else tanked and bonds went to the moon. And I'm like, you mean I lost all this money when I could have gone into bonds and made 10% at the same time? This is no longer making any sense to me whatsoever. I need something else. What always bothered me, and what I'm talking about here is a separate, that thrift savings plan account, which is like the 401k, and it's run like a lot of retirement plans. You have a lot of different funds available to you to put your money in, and you can switch freely between them. But what always bothered me is there was never a fund in there related to precious metals.
Not allowed.
I knew back in the late 90s that the precious metals were where you wanted to go. That was cheap. You know, there was no place to go but up there. But there was no way to do it. And until recently, I realized there is a way to do it. It's just kind of convoluted.
Yeah, ETFs, and you got to transfer to blah, 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 or something.
No, what they allow you to do is you can borrow up to half of whatever you have in that thrift savings plan, and then, you know, you can do with it whatever you want. You can use it to down payment on a house. You can use it, you know, to invest elsewise. And that's what I did recently is I invested in precious metals, half of that account, because I realized that this is no longer making sense to me, so I'm not going to be able to invest it intelligently, because I've obviously
manipulated.
I have no idea what's going on here. I just want
silver and gold's manipulated too, but the other way. Yeah. They're doing it down cheap for me to buy.
Well, what they did for a long time is you were in a secular bear trend, and they were just playing on that and jumping on that. But you know, obviously, the last 10 years, it's been up every year for the last 10 years, so that they don't have that control anymore.
Of course they do. You know, it went from 27 to 37.
They can print all the paper they want. They can't print no more gold and silver.
Yeah, well, but they still manipulate it.
Oh, to the best of their ability.
See, Mikey was the one that had the article we put on Freedom's Phoenix, and it was a column. He sent me an email, and I just put it in like kind of like a letter to the editor, and it was like, you know, when silver hits 30, back up the truck. When it hits 25, back up two trucks. So that's when it's down to 27. He's like, I can't make it down to the thing. Donna, can you please go down with my 10, 11,000, whatever. Just give me as much as I can. And, you know, he bought the bottom. And, you know, we did the same thing. That's why we can do such a good deal on these dime cards now. I got them when silver is down at 28 or something like that. Even with the premium, whatever, you know, to get the mercuries and so on.
I have some bad news for you, Ernie. It's down to like 32.50 today.
Really? Well, I still got it under that. You know, whatever. That's, you know, it's going right. And it may break down below 30, too. I mean, whatever. That just means, what does that mean?
Back up the truck.
That's right. buy some more. That's what it means.
It's on sale. Get it while it's on sale.
And it's just a game that they're playing. It's just, and they keep spending more and more and more and more and more. Oh, on Freedom's Phoenix, there's a lot of good stuff up there. There was a... you know, and you know Gary Franchi's, just chomping, licking his lips when they're going to be bringing the G8 or something to Chicago. Well, they're turning it into a freaking, you know, Rahm Emanuel police state. They're, you know, they got CCTVs every freaking where. They're being, you know, we're suspending the Constitution during the, really? Okay, is that how you guys are going to roll?
So where in the Constitution does it say you can suspend the Constitution? For a meeting.
Because they got the guns, they can't, whatever. So what happened is that they changed it. They're going to Camp David. And they said, you know what? We're going to go to Camp David with this, and we can do what we want there, Camp David, which is, I don't even know what they call that. It's a president, you know, hideout.
Presidential retreat.
You know, today is a Monday to remember as the growing opposition to the NDAA and overseas conflicts continue. The administration took steps to avoid a black eye from the planned militarized opposition to public protest in Obama's hometown of Chicago. So they moved it to Camp David. And I'm just going, you know,
Obama's hometown, so he was born in Hawaii, lived in Indonesia, his father's king.
Whatever, where he was senator.
His adopted hometown. Okay.
Oh, we got to talk about this. All right, we'll do the rest of the segment on this. Here we go. Man, everybody's on my ass. How come I don't have 24/7 top of the page of Sheriff Arpaio going on about Obama's birth certificate? Like, it took Arpaio to make this an issue. And I'm like, where the hell have you guys been? That's a year old or something,
man. That's from before he was elected.
You know, well, I mean,
very immediately thereafter, I'll put it that way.
Well, no, what they're talking about is the Photoshop alteration of the one the White House released.
The obvious Photoshop alteration.
Right. Anybody that understands, when they did this, the White House released this PDF, but it was a layered PDF. You know, I'm like, are they that stupid, or we're being set up? I mean, no, I didn't even have an opinion. I'm like, you know, this is so stupid that I just, you know, whatever, here it is, you guys do whatever. So we put it up, and we've been covering it from the beginning. Everybody's all, you know, I can't believe that you're not, but I'm going, we put it up a year ago, where the hell you been? You know, we've been covering this thing from the beginning. We have, you know, 20-year-old Photoshop geeks detailing exactly what happened, where, how, video, on and on and on. And all of a sudden, you know, there's something wrong with us because we're not making a big deal because Sheriff Arpaio said something. You know, heck, that takes away credibility. You know, so we said, look, where have you guys been? You guys, we've been screaming about this since Trump did his thing. He went, did his investigation. So all of a sudden, Trump's in this thing. The White House goes, they fly to Hawaii and go get, yes, we got the document right here. And they do a PDF of it, and they put it on whitehouse.gov, send it out. And I'm going, are they that stupid that they didn't understand that they gave a layered PDF that has, you can put it in Photoshop and take the layers out and you can see the edits that they made? Or did they do that on purpose for some, I have no idea.
It's hard to believe they just accidentally did such a hack job.
I have no idea. No, but see, the difference is, as they go, well, he's not our president, and this is important, and the number one story in America's history. And I'm going, you guys are missing the point. And I had a conversation with this, you know, a lot of people that go, Ernie, and I go, look, I just want to backhand you. I'm going, they got you arguing over the legitimacy of a person being your, quote, legitimate ruler. And I'm going, they got you advocating to be ruled. They go, you know, there's a position that rules me. And he's not qualified to rule me. And I'm going, yeah. And if he was qualified, he still wouldn't rule me. I mean, you're already advocating. You lost before you even started. You go, but he's qualified to be my king. Oh. Well, nobody's qualified to be my king. I don't give a crap what your piece of paper says.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com, constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
You know, some of the music's pretty good. You know, that's one thing that I noticed as my kids were growing up. Their musical taste was very varied. In our day, you know, you had like, here's your five bands that you're allowed to listen to, you know, or what's popular. Now you go and they started doing MySpace in, I don't know, 2, 3, whenever the heck it was. You know, my kids, they look at their playlists and I'm like, wow, it's very, they had classical music, they had some pop stuff, they had some folk stuff, just, you know, hard, heavy, a wide range. If you let people go, let them be free, they'll pick all kinds of diverse whatever the heck. You know, you have all kinds of stuff in your pantry, you know, on your MP3 player list. I mean, there's, you know, freedom is, it's amazing, you know, how diverse it can be when you quit trying to put everybody in categories. And the one thing that, you know, we left with this birth certificate thing. And it's been the buzz. I mean, I was at the wedding this weekend. We're doing, you know, David was on it. Oh, did you look at it? I'm going, yeah, about a year ago. I mean, you know, this is last summer. So, and I make this point. You're arguing. You're making their argument to legitimize your ruler.
You're accepting the essential premise of the argument.
Right. You know, I mean, they got even the people that are the most adamant against this kind of stuff and then being ruled, they got you. Yeah, well, he shouldn't. They got people that are even the anarchist arguing for a legitimate ruler. And I'm like, are you freaking serious? You're not. Well, I can't say the anarchists. A lot of the we get it. You know, a lot of us. So when I got these people coming at me, you should be covering this more. And I go, well, one, we covered. I mean, how much I got to cover it. But the other thing is, I'm going, you know, they got you arguing to be ruled. You're begging to be ruled. You just want the guy with the right piece of paper. I go, seriously? That's what you're, you know, well, if he has the right piece of paper, he can be my massa. You know, that's how it's working.
My massa has to be born down the road.
Down the road.
Not over the seas.
You know, so I can see it's a psyop. You know, it's almost, and you go, what's the purpose of them being so stupid? It had to be obvious. It had to be so obvious, because what was the end result? The legitimizing of the system. This guy's wrong. He shouldn't know. They can't be on the ballot in Georgia. He can't be on the ballot in Georgia. He can't be on the ballot. They're going to do some kind of something you can't, you know, to legitimize the office by delegitimizing the person that's running that's holding it. Do you see the psyop here? I mean, whether that was intentional or not, that's the end result. And I'm going, you know, do you guys even get it? I mean, you're still voting, you know, for, wow. So that's the argument. You want to come after me on this? Because I love when they do that, because I just send them an email. I go, so if he had the right paperwork, he'd be your massa? Is that how it works? You know, is that what you're thinking? And they're like, whoa, yeah, that's what I thought. Shut up, you know? So don't even start with me on that. You know, some of the other stories, you know, going, I want to get to, is there was an activist, one of the listeners to the show. He said two things you need to watch out for. When they start going after the hoarders, you know, they're saying, oh, you know, you're making too much money, too much profit. China is going to start winding down. And there were two things that he had. I had it up here. There were where are they? Yeah, I opened it up. Is that you had, they're going after the profits of speculators. When he goes, when they start going after, they'll call it speculators. You're making too much money on, you know, speculating, whatever it is, in currency, oil, whatever. When they start going after the profits of that, and I remember this was in 08, a friend of mine, you know, has some money, and he was shorting a bunch. Man, he knew where this is going. Oh, I'm going to make me bunches of money. And they go, okay, we're closing the short. You're not allowed to short these anymore. You can't. And we're going to stop. But we're grandfathering you in. You can be in there and do kind of these whatever. Then his broker calls and says, you need to sell out. Well, they said, graphic, no, you need to get out. Because the word came down, you need to take what you just go. Why? Just trust me. It was the word came down. Oh, no, you're so not allowed. Well, the same thing's going to happen. When they stop the short selling of people that knew, like the Peter Schiff's, you know, he was advocating selling short big time on subprimes. He's screaming it. I remember at the Manchester Freedom Summit we had in New Hampshire. I think it was 03 that we did that. And he was screaming what was going to happen. Well, people that did that, they're like, oh, you can't do that anymore. They just changed the rules midstream. And I know a lot of people went, what the heck? I never would have thought that they would have done that. Well, they did. And I guarantee they're going to do it again. So in your retirements and so on, this, you know, 70 years and 10 years kind of deal, it's just how much can they get in their buckets? And they're going to what? I mean, so what you did is you said, I'm going to, you know, give me as much as I can get now and I'm going to put it somewhere. Where'd you put it?
I'd put it in precious metals, in junk silver.
Why?
Because it's real. It's not a piece of paper. It's not somebody's promise. It's real. It just sits there on the table. It's there. You can't deny it.
Well, it might go down. It's going down today.
It's going down today. Oh, I'm so concerned. Not.
Saying, buy some more. You know, this is, at what point do you make the move? I mean, where does it you want to go?
Where does do I want to go? I want to just move up to Prescott, buy me a little spread, relax, figure out what I want to do with the rest of my life and do it. On my terms, not on the U.S. Postal Service's terms, nobody else's terms. Just what do I want to do? I did it for everybody else for 30 years or more. I want to do it for me for a while.
Well, what is it you want as, like, property? I mean, you just need a little yard. You want a little garden, a farm. Well, you want goats. I mean, what do you want?
Yeah, give me a little modest house with a decent-sized lot that I can put a nice garden in and hang out and, you know, entertain some friends, have a little workshop to putter around in, that sort of thing. You know, that's very American dreamish, but that's where I'm at. Yeah.
And you're at a point that you can do that, you think?
Not yet. Depends on what the silver market does. It keeps going down. I'll never get there. But if it does like I think it's going to do in the next couple of years, I'll be all right.
You know, that's kind of what I'm counting on. I'm just hoping that we can, because in addition to accumulating price, just to try and, you know, maintain something, is it's what you got to buy with it. Silver doesn't do you any good if you're selling it to, you know, buy wheat. I mean, you know, so you got to get some food.
Very important point that needs to be made, and I've heard it made all my life, and you hear it all the time. Get out of debt. You can't get anywhere if you're paying off your debts all the time. That's where all your income goes to service debt. You're not getting anywhere.
And that serves what purpose? I mean, to the bad guys. I mean, because my thing is that
it keeps your nose to the wheel.
Well, I'm just, yeah, no, but I'm, no, my point is that a lot of people are making the argument that, yeah, debt up, man. Get, you know, max out the credit cards, buying whatever, and then just, you know, inflation's going to come to where you're going to pay it off for the week's earnings anyway or something.
That's an argument, too, that needs to be considered. At this stage of the game, you know, you've got negative interest rates. I mean, there's free money out there. It's not like, you know, a decade ago when you had to pay 12, 15% interest on your credit cards and stuff, although I'm sure some people still do. But if your credit rating's high enough, you're operating on almost free money, or as close to free money as you're likely to see with interest rates at the rate they are now. There's an argument to be made there, and they want you, and that's the incentive. They want you to do that because that's how the money supply grows. You write the ticket every time you sign a check, every time you sign that credit card receipt. You're the one that's expanding the money supply. That's the way it really works.
Okay, I'll explain that.
It's just very simple. Money is created on your signature, has been since 1933. They took away the real money, and they made negotiable instruments money in the United States and in the world, for that matter. You know, you don't go out and give them a piece of silver in exchange for a loaf of bread. You know, you're not exchanging like for like or
well, more than that, every time you spend or deposit something, they just keep fractionally reserving it up.
Yep.
Or they're doing, I mean, just create. So that's what's creating the money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's like a lot of money out there.
There's a lot of money, and there's getting more every second.
But, I mean, a lot more.
But that was interesting in 2008 when everything was going to hell. What was their suggestion that what you need to do? Go out and borrow more money.
Spend.
That's how you fire up the economy.
We're going to spend our way out of this
print
debt
more
thing.
Money. And that works up to a point, and I think we're beyond that point. Obviously, it's not working. The economy's not firing up, despite the propaganda that you're hearing out there.
Well, when we come back in the next hour, I want to go ahead and, you know, what we're actually planning on doing, because it applies to a lot of the audience, certainly the young people, because, you know, you're going to be us. It's going to be 20, 30 years from now, which will go by like that. And when it happens, where are you going to be positioned? What did you start putting your money in? You know, were you buying, you know, more government paper kind of something, doing whatever, or are you getting dime cards. I mean, you're making your own dime cards. That's what we're encouraging. It's not like buy dime cards from us. In the promotions of this, we're going to give you all of the equipment and all the listing of everything for you to do it yourself.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
special edition with my friend Mike Duggar, that an activist that we were the young guys back in the day, and he's already getting to the point he's thinking about retiring. So's Anderson. You know, he's like, I'm done. You know, and go. When you have these kind of skills, you can be a consultant. You can do some hobby that you enjoyed, and if you're smart, you paid off your debt. You invested in the things that you know to be of value. They're going to go up, like precious metals and so on. And you have, I remember they went to Dr. Paul and they were making the point on CNBC or something. Well, if you didn't participate in the stock market since the 70s, you know, well, you missed out on all the booms and this and that, and you didn't make money. He goes, I bought gold when it was 101.
I win.
I've been buying gold all the time since early 70s when we went off the, you know, I'm good. Don't worry about it, you know. So this is interesting when they, I wonder how much cash they have to show in their federal requirement. And that's another thing. That's always, you got to do your income tax statements. So, you know, screw you, man. You know, it's none of your business. You know, because you fill out all this stuff when you run for Congress anyway. I mean, it's like you got all this financial stuff, you know, and there's like more attack, you know. So how am I been socially and economically engineered by the man, you know, bite? So I don't give any credence to that. But now we're looking at we're getting up in the age, we gotta, you know, plan for, are we gonna survive, or are our kids gonna, like, you know, take care of us? And Duggar doesn't have any kids, so you're screwed.
Yeah,
man.
Ain't nobody taking care of me but me.
Yeah, you're going to have to get your dog to, you know, learn tricks or something. But, you know, so we're just having to make decisions, and you should too. And I tell you what the biggest investment is yourself. It's your education. It's your knowledge. You do that, you can come out way ahead of a lot of stuff and see it coming. And we've made mistakes. And I knew that I was uninformed enough. I was not smart enough. I wasn't privy enough. I wasn't connected enough to know it. I just said, you know, buy silver. I'm buying silver when it was, heck, just in 2000s, it was what, $3, $6 or something? And it was as low as, I remember it was single digits, $6 and something. It was when I first started getting it. So now, you know, they go, it's down. It went down to 23. And I'm going, yeah, well, I bought most of mine was 13. So I'm good, you know.
Down is up and up is down, depending on your point of view.
Yeah, it's just so, it's so, when it hit 40-something, I'm just going, this is ridiculous. There's just no way it's going to hold up there. But sooner or later, it's going to get, we're going to remember when silver was in double digits. That's my mantra. Because the wave of inflation in the money supply since just this last decade is, I don't think it's all hit yet. And certainly overseas. That's why they're shipping, you know, C-130 cargo planes full of bills. You know, maybe it'll take a couple of years before it makes it back here. We'll give it to them. So let's go ahead and just go over some of the headlines on Freedom's Phoenix. I mean, just to give kind of an idea of the stuff that's been happening. Okay, let's look at, Bank of America in trouble. Looks like Bank of America might have started circling the drain even before the Occupy movement thing. You know, Bank of America, they keep going on, and the more they say they're okay, the more you know they're not.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's going down. You have things like, oh, here's a good one. Dutch mobile euthanasia units to make house calls. Now that, you know, they got the death panel, you know, when coming to America, it's going to be a death van.
Honey, I need to die. Could you call Dial of Death?
Dial of Death. Yep. Then we have no to AIPAC, no to Israel, no to war. Sheldon Richman from Future Freedom Foundation wrote an article because this, I watched a little bit of it, Netanyahu talking to AIPAC last night. And the only thing I saw is he's going on about the lobbyists for AIPAC and the U.S. ambassador to Israel and how we're all buddies and Obama coming out and everything. And they're starting to take a page out of Ron Paul's playbook to where you have Israel saying, we reserve the right to defend ourselves, kind of cool. Right on. Knock yourself out. And you won't be needing any of our tax money, right?
You won't need our military force to back you up, right?
Yeah, or an aircraft carrier or anything. You want to talk about that? You go right on ahead. You know, we'll just stay over here.
We definitely support your right to take care of yourself, but we don't support your right to have us take care of you for you.
But that's what they mean.
That's exactly what they mean.
So
that's
don't
you and
ever
him fight.
Think that, yeah, don't ever think that we're not going to be right in the middle of this thing. And let's see, what do we have? Okay. General warns of Syrian bioweapons and Iranian threat. Okay, so now Syria's got bioweapons. We're so going into Syria. Now, Syria and Iran, I can't believe that they're manipulating us into that.
Where? Prove to me that they have bioweapons.
Doesn't matter. They said we do. They do.
Oh, I mean like with Saddam.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I know
the difference.
And that Iranian nuclear program where they're developing nuclear weapons, right? Where's the proof? What proof?
Doesn't matter. You know, they made the decision. To go. I tell you, Iran, I'm messing with Iran, I'm not sure that's a good idea. You know, Iranians are smart enough. They'll go ahead. Come on in. Yeah, go ahead. Relax, sit in the cafe, have a nice seat, and then, you know, stuff happens. Because I knew in Iraq, I'm going, the Marine's going to have his foot up on the rubble with an American flag saying we win, and then the war starts. What happens when we actually do military actions and so on against Iran? You know, I mean, what would be their response? I don't know, but and they're not stupid people. Imagine, you know, them doing that to me and my family and you know, my home and coming in and doing it. It's like they want to have these problems.
Well, my opinion about Iran and what the problem we have or the United States has with Iran is it's their nuclear option. It's not nuclear in terms of atomic energy or atom bombs or anything like that. Their nuclear option is they're selling oil for something other than dollars.
Ooh, can't have that. Because we knew it was years ago, it was probably at least 4 years ago, that they did their own bourse, which is French for purse or something. It's kind of their commodity exchange.
It's a commodity exchange.
So they opened their own commodity. You didn't hear a bunch about it, you know, lately. I mean, they did. They opened up their own and they said, you know, we're going to take euros. And then they're going, oh, my goodness, we might start taking gold-backed dinars or gold. And that's what got Saddam invaded.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, you might want to know that immediately before we invaded Iraq, Saddam did the same thing.
And Libya. Gaddafi was wanting to have a gold-based currency for Africa. And they're like, oh, hell no. You want to get invaded? Start talking about getting off the petrodollar.
Yeah, you wind up like Gaddafi, dead, out of power, and your gold's now gone.
Yeah, no, this is, heck no, it's a dollar thing. This is all about the money, about the Federal Reserve, right, because it's crashing down. It's math. You know, they can't get away from this. And now you have another story. Is China's role as global growth engine finally over? Investors are worried, this is from CNBC, investors are worried that China's decade-long run as the world's growth engine may be over. Along with unprecedented demand for commodities and ultra-cheap labor and parts for manufacturers. I mean, you know, the made in China thing's starting to go down. So as that is just exponential. They're so tied in to this, like you were saying, the creating of money from debt. And it's multiples. So if you don't do that, you don't get the multiple. That's why after 2008, when the financial crash started, 07, 08, what were they screaming for us to do?
Got to borrow more money.
Borrow more money.
Right.
You know?
Create more money.
Create more, because it was an exponential thing. So this is coming down. They're going down, down, down by got silver. You know, you think I'm... I can't emphasize it enough. I mean, it won't go to zero, I can tell you that. They might try to make it illegal and doing all kinds of funky stuff, but I mean, you know, it's better than the nothing you'll have. I mean, I'd start off with food, but you know. Then McCain is calling for U.S.-led airstrikes in Syria. McCain, you know, beating his chest, going to be, you know, I'm just, wow. Does it ever stop?
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock and my good friend Michael Duggar. We're just reminiscing and learning and kind of preparing for what's coming. And that's one thing that we're doing. Oh, this weekend, are you going to go do the gold panning thing?
No, I'm going to be out delivering mail.
No, oh, but Sunday. I mean, come on, man. You can come out and we'll tell you where we're at and come out and hang. We're going to camp overnight on Saturday and do this. We have some expert gold panning guys. We're just bringing a bunch of guys out there and they're going to learnify us, you know, how to do it just because we can. What the heck? You know, I mean, if you live in Arizona, don't you have a gold pan in your garage somewhere?
Something like that.
Yeah. At least everybody's got, the kids get it. You know, when you go camping, you always get the little kit and whatever. Now and then you'll find some. I haven't found any. He promised that we're going to have some gold to divvy up amongst whoever comes. We'll just divvy it up and it's all earning thing. So Bradshaw Mountains is north of Phoenix here. I mean, like, you can see them. And they're right here. Now that's where, Arizona's a lot of mining. I mean, that's we got some gold. So we're going to go ahead and have some fun with that. But I wanted to go over some of the news things because a lot of this stuff I know Michael have an opinion on. But let's just start with this. Okay. This is good. There was we have a story up on Freedom's Phoenix, Freedoms of the Nest, Phoenix.com. Let me just read it to you. Vanguard CEO Michael Ruscher said his company's prototype drone was flying about 18 feet off the ground when it lost contact with the controller's console on the ground. It's designed to go into an auto shutdown mode, according to this guy, but when it was coming down, the drone crashed into the SWAT team's armored vehicle. He can't make this stuff up.
Like a little friendly fire to start your day.
I tell you, this drone thing, this domestic drone thing, I'm telling you, this is, I mean, did you think this was coming this fast?
I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. It's like, are we really going to let this happen? Are we really going to sit still and let them put drones up and keep an eye on us 24/7?
We knew this was becoming a serious thing when they had the blimps over Salt Lake City.
Where is their justification? Is there this big...
Because they can!
Is there this big crime wave going on that they have to watch us 24/7?
Yes, we're not loving them enough.
Are there terrorist camps in people's backyards that they need to find?
Yes, you know how to spell militia. I'm telling you, man, these guys are scared, and they're dangerous when they're scared. And that brings us to this one story. Massachusetts couple sue cops for unlawful arrest over video camera. This one guy, he tosses his wife his phone, and I guess they were videotaping, and you're not allowed, and ouch, quit it, and they're arrested, and they suing, whatever. But this, I can see how... Stasi and KGB and Eastern Curtain, kind of Iron Curtain people acting this way, but somehow we allow... I mean, they drummed it into us in the 70s and 80s, and certainly the 70s when we were going to school, about all the reasons why the Soviet Union was bad. I mean, I remember going, and they're just hammering it, and they're going, that was our social studies. Our government good, theirs bad. And every single reason I remember that they're going on about how bad they were, that's what we're doing. And we're supposed to then think what? Oh, but it's okay if we do it?
Well, it's the best thing about the end of the Cold War is they didn't have to pump out that propaganda that we were somehow different.
What do you mean?
Well, we're doing the same thing, so we can't really pump it out that we're different when we're doing the same thing now, can we?
Our colors are different.
Oh, that's right. That's
whatever. Well, here comes out Holder, Attorney General. What does he say? The U.S. government has the right to order the killing of American citizens overseas if they are senior al-Qaeda leaders, which we designate they are, who pose an imminent threat and cannot reasonably be captured, Holder said Monday. Now, what he was saying, they're going, you can't do this without due process. And this is the argument they were making, that the president making the decision, that is your due process.
I kind of don't see it that way.
Yeah. So who are you going to ask? The Attorney General of the United States freaking government says, go to the Supreme Court and they say, once you, capitulate to the concept that they rule you, it's whatever the freaking they say. That's one thing that Butler Schaefer always makes a good point. He goes, yeah, the U.S. Constitution is just a piece of paper that is supposed to prevent the government from doing all the stuff it does. Oh, how's that working out? I'm going, okay.
It's not working out real good because nobody's trying to enforce it.
Oh, here's a bunch of gun stuff. I'll just go through this. I tell you, this is something that Mikey and I have been working on a long time. Federal judge finds that the right to bear arms not limited to just your home, a Maryland handgun law unconstitutional. The Second Amendment right to bear arms is not limited to home, and Maryland's requirement that residents show a good and substantial reason to get a handgun permit is unconstitutional, according to federal judge's opinion filed Monday. So, is that a win? You got to read it and see. There's always, yeah, but if. I mean, they still always put in
between the lines that needs to go on before you accept that
right.
At face value.
That's exactly what goes on. They want to put this, but you read it more, they find, yeah, but we can if. I mean, fill in the blank. Now, this is a story that's making a big – this is from Prison Planet – Alex Jones stuff. Obama second term odds spurs rash of gun buying. Now they're blaming it on the fact that Obama, you know, may win again, whatever. What's happening is they're worried that the economy is going to take a crash and I need a gun.
Yeah, I don't think it's Obama. That's spin. They're just trying to.
Yeah.
The current situation in the country, people see where this is going, and that's why they're doing it. Obama's a symptom. It's not the cause of that.
You know what? Greg, a friend of ours, he goes like this. He says, "You know, I don't understand. If you prefer Obama or Romney over the other for any reason, you're just a racist." What's the difference? Racist? You know, I prefer racist, you know, because they're the same. You know, and you were saying, what's Romney's slogan should be?
It should be 4 more years.
Because it's the same. You know it's going to be the same. 4 more years. 4 more years. So that's why I just don't care. I can't. I mean, there's no justification for it. I've been through this so many times before. Now, in Colorado, court says students can carry guns on campus. University of Colorado overstepped its authority when the school's Board of Regents imposed a ban on the carrying of concealed weapons at its 4 campuses, the state Supreme Court ruled on Monday. Wow. So, you know, now Colorado students can carry on campus, which our argument has always been that. I mean, all you did was just create a safe work environment for criminals, like OSHA for bad guys, you know. No guns here. You know, go do whatever. And then, of course, it's always a gun that saves the remaining not dead people when you finally get somebody with a gun to go take out the bad guy. You know, I'm just like, seriously?
Yeah. No, you couldn't be more right about that. You're just creating that gun-free zone that makes it safe for the bad guy who doesn't care what the law is.
Oh, but it's a law. Oh, and here's a story. How marijuana impairs memory.
How?
I don't know. I forgot.
I used to know, but I forgot.
I don't know. As if that's the point. Okay, so then see what else is going on. Oh, Ron Paul gets endorsement from 5 members of Romney's family. You know, which is probably a 0.00007% being as how he's Mormon. There's 5 gazillion of them probably. You know,
quite the extended family, yes.
Yeah, no, the whole side of my mother's family. More, my uncle had 15 kids. I mean, dang, now they're starting to have kids. I tell you, man, they're just breeding us out. It's whatever. They're all
good
people.
Over the world in sheer numbers.
Yeah, this, you know, that's, well, that's why here in Israel, they want so many people coming in. They just need to make sure they keep numbers up.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
You know, let me tell you where this is going to get real obvious. This drug war thing is really amping up, and I tell you what's happening. Right now in Colorado, they have, it's going to be on the November ballot, the legalization of marijuana for recreational use like alcohol. And I'm for, instead of regulating it like alcohol, I mean, you know, Doogie's saying it should be regulated like something else. I mean, you know, like tomatoes, you know, just, you know, whatever. So here we go. Will this happen? Now they're screaming in Central America, south of the border, Mexico and so on. They're starting to go, man, we need to legalize. I don't care what the U.S. says. Screw them. They just may legalize all drugs because it's just way too much money to people that just control everything. It's the drug. I mean, heck, they got congressmen that are drug cartel guys. And this is, and the U.S. government has their feet, the CIA, you know, okay. The CIA, or people in the CIA, former CIA, DEA, Sheriff Arpaio, all these guys, they benefit from this drug war like you wouldn't believe, if not directly. They certainly do indirectly by having all these task force and resources made available to them in the name of the drug war. Nobody wants the drug war more than law enforcement and the drug dealers. This is a prohibition thing, and they know it. How long can they maintain this? I don't know. But the popular sentiment of all people, starting to get the obvious ramifications of prohibition, is having an impact. What will they do? So, Duggar, what do you think? You think that Colorado is going to legalize it this round?
No, but it's interesting that they would even try. But I think you won't see drug legalization until they can actually sell terrorism as a great enough threat to justify the police state so that they can afford to let go of the drug war.
Yeah, it's always going to be somewhere funding the something. The military.
There's always a war. You're always on a war footing for something.
New world order.
Can the war on terrorism really displace the war on drugs?
You know, it's just I'm so. You know, everything peaks, and you just got to wonder how bad can it get before it's like anything. It's like stock market or silver prices or anything. I mean, you get a bubble and it busts. You know, but the government. Bubble hasn't bust yet. I mean, like 08, it kind of started, but all they did is consolidate more power. You know, they just created a bigger bubble. It's going to be the world, though.
Well, every crisis just justifies extending their power. You know, they create their own justification for expanding their stupidity.
The House of Representatives approved a bill on Monday that outlaws protests in instances where some government officials are nearby, whether or not they even know it. The United States House Representatives voted 388-3, I wonder who's in the three, in favor of H.R. 347 late Monday, a bill which is being dubbed the Federal Restricted Buildings and Grounds Improvement Act of 2011. In the bill, Congress officially makes it illegal to trespass on the grounds of the White House, which on the surface seems not just harmless and necessary, but somewhat shocking that such a rule isn't already on the books. You know, this is Russia Today. The wording in the bill, however, extends to allow the government to go after much more than tourists that transverse the wrought iron White House fence. Under the act, the government is also given the power to bring charges against Americans engaged in political protest anywhere in the country.
Isn't that called the STFU bill?
Oh, shut. Yeah, okay. You're so not allowed to complain. And I'm just, wow, this is, you have to ask, how bad does it have to get? But what is, and this is what's amazing. And you being, having years was the state chair of the Libertarian Party. You know, I was county chair at the same time. You and I would be, we'd doing a lot of this stuff. And how many times have you had somebody, and it's always the guy that says, well, when are the people going to wake up? You wake up, wake up, which they mean L. Neil Smith would say, do what I say, but they're not doing it, So they always go, you got to wake up, do what? You should. I got a stack of you shoulds. And I'm going, I just, what is it that they're advocating? And we advocate individual behavior, just be informed and you as an individual prepare. Got chickens? I mean, I got more. I get like a dozen eggs a day now, and they're in prime time freaking laying. I'm handing out, for silver dimes as many eggs as I can do.
Yeah, I've learned that the person you got to listen to is the one who says, "You know what I'm doing." That's the guy you want to listen to.
That's why you're here today.
Find out what he's doing, why he's doing it. Not the guy that says you should.
Well, this is that's one thing. Oh, okay. We'll go through the gun thing. In the mid-90s, we were not gunned. I remember it was you and I. We were at a gun show, and we both bought Makarov 9mm handguns.
Now, are you going to admit to this on the air?
Okay, now, before the Brady Bill was enacted, okay, it was just kind of a principled thing. We're going to get it, and we're not going to have to do the IDM before it was like right before that was enacted. We went down, bought Makarovs, and exchanged guns. Here's I can't, which one was mine? I forgot. I don't know.
It looks just like mine.
Looks like, I can't remember. So this was, and so we're not admitting to nothing knowingly, but the thing is so that we're just at the time we could understand what was coming. It was just more, and then the assault weapons ban thing. So we're buying a bunch of pre-ban, all kinds of stuff and whatever, but we didn't know anything about guns. That was our first gun. I don't know if you had a gun before that. I didn't.
No, that wasn't my first gun. No, I had bought a couple before that, but I like the Makarov. It's a small, reasonably potent little gun that's concealable and easy carry around. And best of all,
industrial, double action,
very
cheap.
Very inexpensive. So if the cops decided to confiscate it, you didn't lose a lot of dollar value.
Yeah, that was another thing. Whenever we went to the protest, or whatever nicer gun anybody had, they always took their Makarov.
You took your Makarov
because it had that little flap holster thing. So even if you didn't have the gun in there, you had the flap holster. Everybody thought you did anyway. So it was just they were good activists. guns because they took them. It's like big deal. Like, remember Fred Vasquez? They took his during our challenge of the concealed declaration of intent to carry concealed and all that. And part of the deal, the big controversy, was getting his gun back, which was like, I don't know, $130 or something at the time. Nobody cared, you know, but it was just the issue. So as we did this, you know, oh, you may have heard me telling you this before. Mike Duggar went by the name Miguel Cartero, Mike the Mailman, okay?
We don't want to go over all that again.
Yeah. Golf, the Gun Owner Liberation Front. He had his cell structure, you know. It was the front nine, the back nine. We had all this. And this is where Clara Wolf, writing her book, 101 Things to Do Till the Revolution, and she says, we're at that awkward time in America where it's too late to work within the system. It's just too early to start shooting the bastards. That was, you know, came from that book. And in that book, she had, you know, different things to do. And one of them was safe, Second Amendment for Everyone, and found us on the net or something. I don't know. And she's talking about stuff we're doing. And she talked about your project, golf. Now, yeah, explain to people. This was after the assault weapons ban, and you were trying to encourage the Republicans to repeal it. Tell the people the story.
The assault weapons ban, it just, you know, was my fed upness. And what can I do other than write a letter to my congressman? You know, get everybody to write letters or something to their congressman in kind of in concert and along a certain line. So I thought, well, you know, this Brady bill kind of sucks. And this crime bill that they passed, which was really just kind of a social engineering thing that contained the assault weapon ban, really, really, really sucked. You know, the whole way it was done and what it contained really sucked. But, you know, what are you going to do? Am I going to sit there and whine, blah, blah, blah? I have to do something a little more creative. So, you know, it was just in the back of my mind. And all of a sudden, this just sort of came to me that, you know, the Republicans, you know, it was a Republican thing. Without the Republican support, it never would have happened. They had to roll over for the Democrats to allow this to happen. And they were trying to say how freedom-oriented they were, like they always do, while, you know, stabbing us in the back simultaneously. So I thought, well, they obviously need to be given the gonads to do what needs to be done.
Now, when we come back, we'll see how he gave, you know, give the Republicans the balls they need to repeal the assault weapons ban. And this went. This was one of the first viral things that happened on the internet. This is, you know, keep in mind, this is the mid-90s, and we were using the internet then. We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasing.com.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, IA, with my friend Michael Duggar, just talking about, you know, back in the day, and how a lot of you that are, you know, in this process of, you know, freedom advocacy and fighting and so on, you know, there's, where are you going to be in 20 years? Are you planning? Do you know what to do? You know, what is it that you get? Is a lot of people are doing, I tell you what, a lot of the guys are doing is land. They're going, you know, get some land, but we're, you know, we're kind of the opinion, you know, it's good to have land. But it might be in another country because, you know, they're going, oh, I'm sorry. Didn't you know you're renting from the government? It's just, and sometimes in property taxes in different states, it's just prohibitively high. You know, in Missouri, it's like almost nothing. You know, the 100-acre farm, Greg, he's paying like, I don't know, $300 a year or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, it changes. It depends where you're at. Like, you go to New Hampshire, there's all kinds of taxes you don't have, except they own your property. You're renting it from the government. So I'm just like, man, can you get away? You know, have you been checking on the property taxes here, how bad it is?
Not really. I mean, I know what I pay on my house, and that's kind of...
How much is it?
I'm paying roughly $100 or $120 a month, something like that.
Rent.
It's rent. That's exactly right. You have to understand that the system of bifurcated title that we operate under here. The government owns the legal title to your land. You just get the beneficial title. You get the use of it. They own it. You're just renting it from them. Same thing with your car.
Whole nother show. But anyway, go ahead and finish on golf. You know, Gun Owners Liberation Front. This was, now keep in mind, this is during the heyday of the militia days, the assault weapon ban, the NRA's out there. Yeah, you know, vote Republican while they're doing all this stuff to us.
Exactly.
And we made, that's why when John Kyle, he voted for the assault weapons ban in 94, running for U.S. Senate from Congress. And we made a big stinking deal out of that. We had, you know, planes pulling banners. We were doing signs. Zeke Kyle was swatting stickers and everything. We were being real buttheads. And I'm just like, no, you are not getting away with this, because the NRA gave him an A-plus rating after he voted for the assault weapon ban.
The NRA was not going to get away with that.
Yeah, no, we hammered on them. That's a whole show right there. So anyway, so he started the Gun Owners Liberation Front to kind of make fun of this. Now tell him, you know, what brought you to the attention of Claire Walsh? She put you in the book.
Well, it was a reaction to that whole contract with Iran or America, whatever it was that New did, as just, you know, propaganda throughout the campaign there in, was 94 or whatever, and going into Congress, he's going to do this, and he wasn't going to do nothing. But at any rate, I'm like, well, how can we counter this? And I thought, well, you know, we got to counter this whole gun thing. And so I came up, well, there's two parts of this. You know, you've got that crime bill that included the assault weapon ban. You got the Brady bill. They all came through with Republican support, or they never would have happened. So we got to get back. We got to give them the balls to go in and repeal it now that they're in charge of Congress. So I thought, well, you know, I've got this Gun Owners Liberation Front idea, and it was all about, you know, the militia, you know, rumors that were going around and how they had cell structure. So I tried to create an activist kind of a cell structure.
Scare,
you know,
the crap
thing
out of them.
You know,
I mean, the logo was like about an AK. You had the logo, the golf thing, but you also had that part of the art was an AK-47 with a bandit in the ground as a tee for a golf ball.
With the Capitol in the background. You know, that was what it was like. So what we did was I'd take one ball, we called it the crime ball, and another ball, we called it the Brady ball. And we took a little, you know, woman's nylon stocking. We dropped them in there, threw a knot in it a couple inches up, tie a mailing tag on.
Ankle stocking. Yeah.
Yeah, an ankle stocking. And you know, throw a knot in it so the balls will stay in the little bag there. And then tie a mailing label to it and send it off to Newt Gingrich. Promissory Newt Gingrich.
The promissory Newt.
That's correct.
You know, and this became a big deal because it looked like a scrotum. Okay? Give the Republicans the balls they need. And one of the graphics, and I still have that poster out there. I should show you.
Oh, do you have the poster?
Yeah, the original poster. I got it.
My cousin drew that.
He drew this, and it's like an elephant looking back over his shoulder at his butt, Michael was up there on the wall with the hog leg. I mean, this big 44 Magnum revolver of Bob's or something.
I'm holding onto the barrel using it as a hammer.
You know, and he's hammering in a golf tee that had the scrotum, and it was like giving the Republicans, you know, the elephant the balls.
That's a little turn on the pin the tail on the donkey, but since it weren't the Democrats we were after, we had to come up with something a little different.
So it was a very cool graphic. And this was one of the first, I mean, this is back when you had 2,400 baud modems kind of thing. It'd take, you know, five minutes.
So just to download that little picture.
You know, but this is one of the first uses of the internet. This is 94. You know, people are like, you know, you could actually have graphics on web pages and so on. But and you're getting awards for this stuff. I mean, we're just, you know, having a good old time. We understood the power of the internet back in the day because this could spread this. We had a bunch of stuff like this. But this one was kind of cool because I remember you were on vacation that week. You let your beard kind of scruffy grow. You got all scruffed up, and you had this beret and sunglasses, and you have Pancho Villa, kind of the what do you call those things, the bandoliers or whatever. You know, you had ammunition across your chest.
It was just a little vest with little, you know,
golf tees.
Golf tees in it, yeah.
Yeah, so he's at, like, behind the desk, has logo behind him. There's all these stage photographs in our safe office that we had. The second member of the ferry, we had an office in one of the headquarters there. And it was a nice place. He's all got it all, you know, serious, you know, the front nine cell structure, the back nine. All, and it was obvious.
Had a golf logo on a poster up on the wall behind me.
It was an obvious parody. And it was so entertaining and giving the Republicans the balls they need. And this went viral. And it was one of the first, I mean, as much as viral things go, you know, back then. But it was, I mean, you're getting it from all, everybody thought this was the coolest thing. But what did it do? It exposed the NRA as just a lapdog of the Republican Party, or vice versa, same thing. And you sit there and you look at this, it was so hypocritical of them, and the NRA given A-plus ratings for people voting for the crime bill. You know, and the assault weapon ban and all this stuff. This is, and the Brady, all this was a Republican and an NRA, just a fundraising crap. So when they came here to Arizona, they had a big to-do here. It was one of their convention, national conventions. And under every hotel room in the downtown area, I mean, it must have been half a dozen hotels, every single door got two flyers from us. One thing from L. Neil Smith. It was, 12-step program to get off the NRA. And then Fuller had this one. It was called Your Guns, Your Rights, Your Vote. And we put those in. The national convention went into executive session 17 times because people would bring, hey, what about, boom, executive session, all debate canceled. They halt all debate. 17 times they did that because people were bringing up, hey, is this true? Did you do that? You got, and they were like, man, he's freaking, we ain't never coming to Arizona.
Yeah, they slammed that gavel every time they tried to go off the script. So,
you know, this is, so we've been doing this for a long time. So this is why when you start, Arizona has unrestricted concealed carry now. It wasn't in a vacuum that that happened here. It was from a political, cultural understanding of the people and the politicians here. You don't screw with us. And they are, you know, playing all this game a little around the edge, and it's kind of, no. So what do they have? They have legislation in there now to allow unrestricted concealed carry, also campuses, bars, all kinds of stuff. And this in Colorado, you got a judge saying, yeah. You can't stop them from bringing on campus. So I'm just going, you know, it's a cultural thing. And we have been privy to this and watched it happen our entire adult lives. So when people are talking about going mamby-pamby around the edges, compromising, what's compromise? Death.
Yeah.
You know, that's why L. Neil Smith does always, he goes, compromise is death. Because you're always giving away something. So we just never compromise.
He always made the point that you were giving away something, but you weren't getting anything in return. That's not a compromise. That's just giving
death.
It away.
Death, death, death. So now we're into where the zombie apocalypse is on the horizon. You know, are you feeling you're pretty prepped? What are you doing?
Well, I'm not doing a lot. I mean, I bought some silver. I bought my guns and ammo a long time ago. It's laid in. I'm hopeful that it won't just all go overnight, and I'll have the old to prep and get the food that I feel is necessary when the time comes. But
you better hurry up, man. I mean, you know, it won't happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. It's going to be one of those overnight deals.
I've been noticed. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, and I think it's significant. But if you go into Costco or you go into Fry's Electronics, whatever, these days, there's a lot more empty floor space in those buildings. Both of them recently have kind of restructured the way that their shelving and their merchandise is laid out, and there's a lot more open space.
For something?
No, it just used to be full of merchandise, and now it's full of air.
You know, one thing that did interest me is somebody sent me photographs of the Walmart in the East Valley out there had its own prepping section. Preppers. You look at it, you know, it's these big blue tanks, you know, all kinds of water purification
angle.
Stuff.
You watch.
Now, here it comes. Heck, they got the doomsday prepper crap on cable now on, you know, the National Geographic, whatever. You know, this is, it's coming. Are you ready? I mean, you'll go, well, I didn't know. Well, why? How did you not know? You just need to keep breathing in and out. And whatever it takes to do that, for as long as possible, it's going to be that simple. Well, I just wanted to share with you, you know, we were in your stage years ago, and now all of a sudden, 20 years later, boom. Are you ready? You need to start getting ready, even at your young age. Talk to you tomorrow.